Hi, I'm Josh, and no, Ma, Bertha's my granny. I'll do it. That was someone dealing with a rabbit granny.
That's amazing.
Shame!
Hi, I'm Matt, and I guess that is perhaps the most humane way to deal with rabbit grannies.
I suppose.
This is Charlie Dunn Austin. I mean, there's this thing that, like, we've all sort of thought about, which is that, like, oh, mermaids, and oh, mermaids. And you're like, but how do you, and then Robert Eggers is like, well, this is how that goes. Out of 10.
Del Toro took a swing at that, too.
Yeah, he did.
Yes. Willem Dafoe, but we are Willem a little too de-friendly. And this is harsh on hot topic. Before we get going, I think we need to beat the dead horse in the room.
Hey-o.
I talk about the elephant beating the horse to death. We watched a short this week that was called Dead Horse, El Caballo Muerto, and is a neat little animated thing. Kind of reminded me of we had another one that was like The Life of Death.
It did remind me of that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's good call, Josh.
Like, I swear I've seen a similar style before, but this is just super neat looking and has, like, manages to get the simplicity that you need to be able to animate as a single human being, but also be really visually lush kind of too. And it seems to tell a story that, like, you can at least vibe with if you're not sure exactly what's happening. Seems to be some kind of creature living in the woods, yanking out animal skeletons and turning them into an army. And then one lone wolf, he leads the charge against the thing and manages to cut it down to size. Was kind of where I ended up.
Yeah, and like kind of being bros wins out over violence. Mm-hmm. Was kind of the whole thing. Like, that's like, I took it as having kind of a positive ending of like, we've learned to coexist.
Well, it kind of reminded me a little bit of...
Yeah, I just thought this managed to do a couple of things with that sparse art style. They're a little like, ooh, like the first time the skinned animal like suddenly just snaps its head to look at our little protagonist, wolf. I was like, that's kind of creepy. But then more than impactful, I think, than that is that there's a couple moments of this that are just really capture melancholy. And that sort of, I think, is what makes this stand out, where it's not all just like boo, boo, boo things, you know, jumping around and being weird. And it's not just doing crazy shit because it's animated and you can. It kind of makes you care about this weird little journey you're on, even if, like you said, you don't necessarily understand what it means all the time. So I liked it. What do you think, Charlie?
I was rooting for that wolf, and I was actively sad when it looked like he was going to lose his skeleton.
Yeah.
It's like, but that's our wolf. That's our guy we've been following. That is lead wolf, right? But yeah, I thought it was really neat.
Yeah, that's the Life of Death is a very good, not comparison, but like a good reference point, because like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily 100% make sense A to B, but I don't think that necessarily matters. It's sort of more like you're just kind of just getting the data as it presents it, sort of like in kind of a weird way, like almost like a, what's that crazy French one, the Fantastic Planet, or
Fantastic Planet will do it with the in the cell.
And it's like, and it, where you just kind of get like, we're like, well, stretches of this, like, I get nothing. I got absolutely nothing. Like, what's going on with this thing? What's going on with that guy? Like, why did that guy do that? What the fuck's happened with this thing? And it's just sort of like, alright, fine. And you just gotta kind of go. It's like, so I don't think, yeah, things like this, you can kind of just get a little bit more surrealist and out without being pretentious.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think this has that vibe of being like, oh, look at us being all like indirect about whatever. Like, I don't, that's not really the vibe I get from it.
I think it's just thoughtful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's more like it's trying to be primal, like genuinely telling a story that you can vibe with without any dialogue or any real reference beyond knowing like those two things are wolves. And it's not a good idea when your skeleton's on the outside.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of made me think of like, Josh, I don't think you've read it, but Matt, I know you read Never Whistle at Night, you know, the compilation. Yeah, yep. Like, this almost feels like a story.
Yeah, very much.
You know, like, in there'll be a
little folklore bit.
Yeah, like, this would be the story told in a story. Like, this would be the thing that was told in a story.
As and an then, origin like, of something.
Then like, yeah. Something occurs with it. Yeah, like, it actually occurs. And it's like, and that, it kind of had that feel to it of, like, that kind of, like, kind of old god kind of vibe to it, which I thought was really kind of nifty. So, yeah, good. Yeah. That was cool. A nifty little thing.
Neat.
So somebody needs to make a movie where the character sits down and tells people this story, and then they can just use that short and it'll be neat.
See, yeah, that works.
So many good ideas. I just need
we'll call it the Princess Brit. No, we'll call it
guess who's coming to dinner.
The king's nephew, his former roommate, I think. By the way, we watched The Princess Bride with Fred this week.
Oh,
and when Erin found out she hadn't seen it, she's like, oh, we're doing this. And Fred's like, I don't know if I'm going to like it. And we're like, you're right, but you need to watch it. And she's like, I don't think I really want to. It was great because she was acting like Fred Savage does at the start of the movie.
Just thinking that.
And like, she too was cool that for it. The whole movie.
That's amazing.
He's like, that. When he stops, the eel does not get her at this time. And you can tell she like visibly relaxes. She's like, oh, this is so freaking cool. And then like the next morning she watched it again before I was awake. Like, yeah.
Awesome. You've done well.
This is not like a kissing book.
Yeah. You nailed the timing on that. If they're watching it again the next morning.
Oh, that's so cool. What a cool deal.
I asked her to do something and she said, as you wish. And then she's like, hey, I was like, ah, your that's first awesome. Pop culture reference. Oh
that's watch terrific.
Beetlejuice tonight, by the way, because she's dead set on watching Beetlejuice 2.
Nice.
Because apparently they will just go ahead and put that trailer like right in front of Despicable Me 4.
Oh yeah? Is the Beetlejuice PG-13, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty freaky.
Sure. I mean, that's the original one scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
I mean,
I loved Oliver it and watched it repeatedly, but I had nightmares about it.
Oliver is like a deconstructionist, though. So he's like, oh, so man, they did like a practical effect here and they handed it off to stop motion. And that's so cool. And Fred just sees teeth.
Yeah.
Right. She's like,
I'm team Fred.
Your daughter, Chuck, is still, yeah. So freaky.
Anyway, why are they putting out in September? I do not know. I will never understand.
Because it's got to be like there's some Brewster's Million style bet of how long can we go with just shelving all of our Halloween releases till spring. Like, yeah, the, we're like when Warner Brothers and Disney have like $1.50 on it.
This is like clearly this is a like tentpole film. So if we put it, you know, it's a Christmas movie with a Hanukkah subplot and like a Kwanzaa side plot. So if we can release it in March, it can be the first blockbuster tentpole of the season.
I don't remember which year it was. It was like 4 or 5 years ago, I think. I don't remember exactly when it was. I thought it was like 2017, 2018, somewhere in that ballpark. I don't remember. But there was one October where for nearly 3 weeks of October, not a single horror movie in any theater that a normal person could go to. 3 weeks of the month of October, not a single goddamn one of them. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, what is going on? Like, casual people, normal people were like, I want to go see that. I want to see a monster movie. When do they do that? Fucking October.
Right.
God, yeah. Son of a bitch.
Like, well, I feel honey, like it's April.
Yeah, we scream this into the sky every October because it's just...
Well, I think about like with Renfield, and I think about like with some of the other ones where like, yes, we must put this out in February. Like, sure. Good plan.
At least this year we got Romulus and we got Nosferatu coming up.
Yeah.
The Watchers was... but it existed, you know.
Yeah, Watchers was...
We're trying for it. Anyway, let's talk about some of the things that we watched a while ago at this point. But
yeah.
You know... we could start with The Lighthouse, or El Faro. And this is just a two-hander, if you don't mind me saying, between good old Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. And it is a fearlessly anti-commercial movie, for sure.
Oh yeah, this is made for precisely nobody.
Yeah, it's black. It's black and white, Academy ratio to square. It's just two people doing like Waiting for Godot crossed with like the live action Little Mermaid a little bit.
Yeah. So, and jerking it.
Yeah. And then plenty of like implied and expressed sexuality barely contained.
Yes.
I feel like.
Bodice
rip. Like I'm not a guy to see things where there's not things. I just feel like, you know, I don't think like every character in every movie is in love with each other, but I do feel like there's some sexual tension between these dudes, especially as the months go on.
Certainly.
So this movie is just about a guy who comes to work in a lighthouse under the cantankerous old lighthouse keeper, and lighthouse keeper won't let him see the actual light, which is apparently the main attraction. And they have a very borderline abusive relationship, and then there's a storm and all hell breaks loose, and they just kind of disintegrate into drunken insanity, and we get to see some fun visuals of their delusions. Was kind of how I read it. Like, it's possible that he really did find a mermaid on the beach that had a vagina and had sex with her, and then it turned into Willem Dafoe. It's possible, but I don't know if that was intended to be taken literally.
I mean, I think you summed up my basic understanding of it. I just think, yeah, these two guys acting like weirdos is insanely compelling, you know? So.
Because you have a while where, like, one is getting melancholy drunk every night, and the other, Pattinson's just like, I don't drink, don't drink. And then it's like, okay, one drink. Okay, one bottle.
Okay, we're drinking, methanol from the...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, now we're out of booze, so we're going to mix honey with kerosene and drink that. Just see what happens. Good Lord.
Well, it's also they play around with you a lot. This is one of the secret screenings for Fantastic Fest in 2019. But I wasn't a huge fan of it coming out of that one. I was really? That was cool. Oh. But that was the weird thing. It was like, I was like, okay, I like this pretty well. I was like, it's like a little, it may have been like on day four. So I was like, a little bit worse for wear. But then watching it again, I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, this is great. I love it. And so I was like, I don't know what happened the first time around, just besides just being tired or whatever. But it's like, yeah. I think it took a few goes to kind of get to the idea that like, they really, Eggers is really messing with you the whole time. You're like, is one of these characters just certifiably insane and just playing different characters at any given point just to mess with the other one? Are they both just nutty?
One or both covering up something very nefarious by pretending to be someone they're not?
There's a part in the middle where you're like it does feel like Pattinson is like putting on this, like there's like an act of like this, like, you know, kind of simpleton sort of thing, and clearly there's got something else going on. Like, No, he doesn't.
Dafoe has a couple times where stories he tells don't line up.
Yeah, and you're like, wait a minute. Either
one really could be full of shit. Yeah.
Like, he's got something he's covering up. Like, no, he's just eccentric and like doesn't have a lot of human contact is the thing. It's like, nope, that's not it either.
So you're sitting there, trying to figure out where the danger is coming from, and then you realize that probably that's not the point. You know, like establishing which one of them is telling the truth and which one isn't, mm-hmm. isn't really the game. Like it seems like it's meant to feel like that's the game, but then I didn't feel like it. That was what they were going for.
I feel like, that's the game of each scene, is seeing who's trying to like out crazy or outwit the other. But the actual experience we're getting though is just like, look at how insane being alone on this island with one other human being that you don't particularly like makes you. I think it's just kind of watching people go stir crazy that maybe have reasons to go a little faster than the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And they're just really compelling, at least for me, that's all I need from it. And that it does a great job of that.
Well, and then also the whole bit, the whole thing at the end, well, and also just like the buildup of the thing of like you can't go see the thing at the whatever the thing is called on the top of a lighthouse, like the doohickey. Like, you
dare can't go I up say there. Light.
the light, that the big thingy bomb. And it's like, you can't go up there. And it's like, well, that doesn't make any damn sense. He's coming to work at the lighthouse. Wouldn't it make sense for you to go see how the light thing works? No, that's mine. What do you mean yours? You're an employee of Lighthouse LLC or whatever. Like, you know, this isn't like, what is he covering up? What is he? But then once you get to the axe wielding, maniacal, crazy last 10-15 minutes of the thing, and he like makes his way up there, or whatever else, and it's like it just becomes very. It does feel like, I guess this is based on like a Poe story, but it's like it feels more like a Lovecraft type of a thing where it's sort of like. The lighthouse is not actually a lighthouse. It's like this, like it's the unknowing, like undescribable. Bleh. And it's like, okay. And it's just like, that's the level of madness that you're to. And it's like, okay, well, neat. All right. Well,
and for similar reasons, I get a very Moby Dick vibe from this as well, where it is just man trying to conquer his own demons while having it be projected onto something else, and they're projecting all the evils of the world on each other and all the good things in the world on the light, and what's actually happening is just dudes acting like insane people.
Yes,
because like the first time that you look up and you see the guy dancing naked in front of the light,
yeah,
like he's trying to summon Dong Man, you know, like he's making,
that's not how you summon Dong Man,
his bat signal. And I think the first time you see that, you are very on your guard until the boat arrives and you can get the fuck out.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's just waiting for his chance to dance naked in the light. I do like, so by the end of this, we have, he's got Defoe on a leash like a dog. He buries Defoe alive. That doesn't help. Defoe comes back, like hits him with an axe. He finally manages to kill Defoe. He goes up and finally gets to look in the light, and he has like a total 2001, but then yes. Like I did 2001 Leagues Under the Sea kind of thing.
It was a total eclipse of the heart. Yes.
Yeah. So I was actually glad that they kept it weird. Like they never
for sure
collapsed that to go like, okay, well here's what's really happening. You know, they don't show him like fucking a mermaid and then they cut and he's fucking like a manatee, you know?
Or you have the like replacement crew show up in the cold light of day and he's just like rocking and muttering to himself or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or you go history of the world and like he looks in the light and they go and cut. Like,
right. What? Yeah. Like, did you guys have that moment of confusing this for what was the other one? Was it Cold Skin? Or.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where like the mermaid monsters show up and they actually take one of the female mermaid monsters into the lighthouse and just fuck it as like a sex slave. And I was like, man, wait, is this where, does Willem Dafoe fuck a mermaid? Does he keep a mermaid? And then I was watching going, I don't think this is that movie. And I think my brain tried to combine them and I was starting to not like the movie because I thought that's where everything was leading. And then I realized it was just me and I was the problem.
But Cold Skin was turned out fine. It took that Lovecraft idea and turned it inside out. Like going back to that, like Lovecraft is always, these people seem to be human, but they're different from us, so they're monstrous and scary.
Right.
And then, and that one was just, these people seem to be different from us, but they are people.
Right.
And that was it. Like that was the lesson to learn. Like it's hard to say, you know, I gazed into the gibbering eye of tolerance and went mad, but right. It works pretty well. This one, no, nobody learns anything or grows really as a person. It's just weird shit front to back. But I like the performances you can describe as fearless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do think both of them were absolutely fearless. Like they left nothing tucked away, shall we say.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That did not look easy.
Well, and like Defoe, you kind of expect his level of commitment to just lunacy. Like he's really like, you know, time and time again, you see him and stuff, and you know, people make jokes about it, the way he looks, like, okay, fine, whatever. But like, dude is just like legitimately intense and amazing actor.
One of my favorite people to watch.
Just, he's just incredible to watch in so many different types of things, and he's just a fascinating dude. But man, you know, Robert Pattinson, like, forget about the Twilight movie stuff, whatever else. Like, you watch him in a thing like was it Good Time? I think is one I was thinking of. It's the Safdie brothers one, where it's just sort of like, it's just you forget every 10 minutes. I'm like, nope, that's just a guy. It's a dude.
Like, yeah, I'm happy that the years since all the Twilight shit have taught me to like eat my words, that both those leads are actually really phenomenal actors.
Yeah, it turns out Kristen Stewart's just fascinating fucking to watch rules. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was great in the underwater one. She was great in the Joan Jett one. I was like very kind of nervy about, but it's like, oh, she's great in that one.
She's really good in that.
So it's just it's kind of neat to see them go. But yeah, Pattinson just like. It's like, you know, it doesn't feel like somebody, you know, like even though they're a lot of fun, but like when you have like the jock goes on SNL and like, you know, does some like some silly stuff and you're like, okay. And it's like, it could be fun. Like when Eli Manning did the thing about like when he has to like does the thing on the stand, the SNL sketch where he's going to like recount his text messages he's sending out to people like for his alibi. And like, it's fun because like you're making the jock do silly shit. Like, okay, fine. And it's like, this doesn't feel like that. It's just like, it's not like, you know, pretty boy actor like, you know, like put some mud on his shoulder. I think, no, this is a deeply committed.
Well, that's the thing, is it's like he skipped ahead to that, like, you know how like there's a point where like when Affleck got old enough he could start kind of playing serious roles and he could start to take him seriously, but prior to that you're like, you're still that dopey looking kid, even if you're in like The Sum of All Fears or whatever, you look too young and dumb to be in Armageddon and save the world. And like Pattinson somehow skips ahead to like the actual seriousness that usually takes longer without being dead behind the eyes like Affleck is. So that'll probably like serve him well.
More of the Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's way, a great, yeah, it's a way better
comparison. Seems like he grew up, like he went from pretty boy to daddy real fast.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that by the end of this, we have like, so we have the one-eyed seagull, and like killing the seagull brings bad luck. And then we have the head of the other lighthouse guy who went nuts. That's missing an eye. Right. And by the end of it, we've got Pattinson lying naked on the beach in like a very Prometheus fashion.
Yep.
Yeah. With birds chewing on him, and he's missing an eye too. So it's like, it's one of those where either this is all symbolism that you can unpack for a good long time, or this is like, oh brother, where art thou? Kind of, we're going to show you these references that you get, but like, let's not dig too deep into it. I mean, for fuck's sake, let's just have fun, you know?
Well, and that's that.
I don't know
thing
why
that...
I keep coming back to fun for this movie, because it's weird as shit, but it's gleeful in a way.
It certainly is, yeah. There's and that's the energy, thing. I think a lot of that stuff that's like heavy imagery, because there's some part of this too that made me think of like, what is it? Is that thing? It's Saturn devouring his son. The painting, and there was like some aspect of this from like, God, this is like evoking that kind of imagery and horror to me in like this weird moment of this fight. And I, you know, that's where you always wonder how much of that is like, yes, and I want to illustrate that as they're fighting through replicating this versus, oh shit, did you see that? If we line them up a little different, they'll look kind of like that one thing, and that's a dope image, and that might be all it is, you know? And I think this film comes off to me as a thing that's happy to let you go down either side of that, as long as it's entertaining you.
Yeah, I don't think enjoying it relies on either interpretation, really.
Yeah.
Personally.
Well, and also, this is one of those ones that definitely falls in the Charlie category of, like, how great would this be on stage?
Oh, so good.
Oh, yeah, because it's basically, like, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, or Waiting for Godot or something.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, too, because, like, once the house gets more fucked up and things are going more south and more water's getting in or whatever else, one of my upper-level stagecraft classes in school was, like, you had to do a staging in an unlikely scenario. And so I had Waiting for the Godot, and I set it inside of the belly of a whale. And it was like, so like, you know, like the dripping water and like the ribs in the background and like the light from like the blowhole and like boxes and, you know, kind of fucked up sea stuff. And it's sort of like, and so like within the third act of this, you're like, oh, just, you could just smell it. It's like, oh God. So it's like, it has that aesthetic. And fucking Eggers, man, that guy's a wizard when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like, it's, yeah, this one certainly had a higher budget, but like everything that the dude has done, it's like, he is just amazing at being able to capture like what the air tastes like. It's just really, it's something else. Like Northman was the same way. Like, and I'm baffled by like why that one just didn't to get all the things, because like Northman rules, but that one is just like it kind of feels like you feel it under your fingernails. Like it's just like it's that kind of a thing. And so I'm very excited for his next deal, the Nosferatu. I think that'll be a trip and a half. Cannot wait.
Yeah, so this for me is it's like a 7.5 out of 10. I would say it is vastly fascinating, and I wish it had a little more substance to go with just the insanity, but the insanity is enough.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's fucking weird and the right kind of weird, and features two actors that are favorites of mine now. Yeah, I know it is divisive, I think. I know a couple people that I've brought this up, and they just kind of give one of those like, ugh, that, no. And gave it the kind of capital A art treatment that I give things sometimes. And like it just, it seems way too fun for me to do that. So I'll go real high on this. I'm going to say it's like a 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 potential Greco-Roman imagery references.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think I'll be kind of in the middle-ish. I mean, like, I really have enjoyed this, you know, kind of like coming into really appreciating it and just like picking out little bits and pieces and just to kind of just the commitment of the whole damn thing. It's just sort of like, and what I love is that now this will be the third time, I guess, having watched this. And it's like, I always often have the inclination to be like, wouldn't it be, what would it do to the thing if you had like, an outsider, like somebody grounded in reality, kind of walk up like Jesus, and it's sort of like, and I don't know why I have that inclination a lot of times when things are just completely loony. And I also love the idea that I'm sure in development they probably thought about the idea of introducing additional character or characters, and just like didn't. And it's sort of like, because it's just like this would just lend itself to some outsider like walking up and being like, well, that's a mess. And like, there just isn't that, and it's just like ah, that's great. So yeah, I'm gonna say 8. I think I'll say 8. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10. I don't want to be that guy, but like, you really misrepresented this listing on ZipRecruiter. Out of 10.
No. You went on ZipRecruiter. You ridiculous fellow, and that's where you were led astray. It's a shitty Airbnb too.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, yeah.
What's your Wi-Fi?
Super hot mermaid sculpture though.
Nice.
Yeah. Just
practicing gratitude.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wow. Let's just take a second and think about what we've done, and we'll be right back with our other two movies.
Yes, sir.
Well, let's talk about Humane. It came to us from Canada. It was one of the most Canadian films I've seen in a while. And, features this kind of weirdly loaded cast, though, because we've got Jay Baruchel in there, and Enrico Colantoni from Galaxy Quest. And many other things.
That dude runs
and everything.
Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter Gallagher, who was, you know, that thing you do and everything else. And Emily Hampshire, who took me forever with the haircut she has, but finally is like, that face. Fucking, that's Stevie from Schitt's Creek.
Well, yep.
God damned.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't watched enough of that to recognize anyone.
Oh,
sorry. I know. It's on my to-do list.
You offend me deeply.
I had to watch Kite Man Hell Yeah.
Huh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So this is a movie about a dystopian future where the world's like food stores have collapsed due to climate change, and all of the world leaders agree that each nation should reduce its population by 20%. And America has a voluntary program where people can sacrifice themselves and get their, you know, their descendants get paid, you know, X amount of dollars, what, $200,000 or something?
I thought it was millions. Yeah. Wasn't it a lot? No, that was because I thought they gave one example that was like $5 million or something. That might have been where like both parents did it or some shit.
Yeah, I think it's definitely under $1 million. Like,
no, okay. Then that's even
very
zany.
Like a life changing amount of money, but not enough that would guarantee your life wouldn't change back.
Well, yeah, not enough to put you into the type of society that has decided to offer that amount of money as a reward for killing yourself instead of them.
Yes.
So that's the setup we've got. And then Dad calls his children, you know, his grown children to the house so that he can tell them that he's decided to enlist, so that his death will mean something and he can die for a noble cause. And it turns out when you sign up for such a thing, you get door-to-door death service, and the death person arrives and is supposed to get Dad and Mom, and doesn't get Mom because she takes off, and so says, "You owe me a body, you guys get to work it out." And then, like, that could be a setup for a number of things, like right. A very serious thing or a very dark comedy thing. And I feel like this hits probably a little too close to the middle.
Yeah.
But it still does manage to nail a couple of things. You know, we have like Jay Baruchel's politician is just so punchable. I was impressed.
It is essentially just his character, because he did that same like right wing so and so, right wing Kenny or something on Letterkenny for like two episodes, where he's just this weird internet zealot that sounds almost exactly like that. And it's like, oh shit, this is hilarious, because that shit's funny.
That's why.
Well, some of the language. A
minute of Letterkenny, but.
Oh, you absolutely need to. There you go. I'll watch whatever that other thing we talked about was, and you watch Letterkenny. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, some of the language, but there's a clip on that the kind of talk show or Crossfire type of thing, and like some of the language, it's like it's the same way that a lot of the Silicon Valley, you know, Elon Musk's of the world think, where like you just go like it has to be big picture, you have to move fast and break things, and it just makes sense on paper, and it's like yeah, but in reality it doesn't really work so good. And it's like, yeah, we don't have time for that. And like, we gotta keep moving. And it's like, yeah, it's not a thing. Like, I always think of when Google did the thing with Google Fiber, they did they had this big idea. They're gonna run these fiber lines, and they're gonna do fiber hoods, and they're gonna like run all these lines everywhere, and then everybody's gonna have this insanely high internet. They're gonna one city after the next, and this, that, whatever else, and this will be really great, and we can work with builders and blah 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 blah. And at no point did anybody at Google go, you know who we ought to talk to, is maybe like a civil engineer or two, because under the ground there's like rocks and other shit and other kind of weird whatever. So by
there's
the time they got done
under here.
By the time they got done with Kansas City and they moved to Austin, was the second one, they did the first fiberhood here, and it got so prohibitively expensive that they literally finished the first one in like Northeast Austin. The second area was our area, and then the one after ours was, they were like, we can't fucking do this anymore because there's like stuff under the ground and other power lines and like sewage things and rocks and boulders and groundwater and other kinds of things. Like, yeah, Dad, that's how ground is. Like, that's, you know, if you talk to somebody who does this,
it's
for
not a beach.
Yeah,
it's made of stuff.
And it's just sort of like, it's like, well, we didn't plan for that. Like, yeah, no kidding. And it's like, and so it's one of those things where his language reminds me of that way of thinking, where it's sort of like, it's just that thing of like, well, I mean, if we just produce the population by this amount, then everybody survives. And it's like, sure. But you recognize that, like, you know, and the movie does enough lip service to like the ways that this can be corrupted, or like, you know, the public, they're like, oh, well, they're saying it's this many numbers, but the numbers are much more like this, and you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, they make some lip service to that. You could have made a whole movie just about that, but like, so they address that a little bit. But then this idea that, like, you know, again, it's like the idea of like the Silicon Valley mindset of like, you know, stuff on paper will make sense in real life, and like it doesn't really work that way. This is like a great example of that, where you bring all these people together, there's resentments and there's human stuff, and then there's bitterness and there's all kinds of other kinds of stuff, and it's like you can't control that human element. It's impossible. You just can't. And it's sort of like, and so then it just all devolves into a mess. And it's sort of like,
I really liked how it pulled that snapshot of kind of the American way of thinking, because like this is a Canadian thing, but it's set in America, and they have a very American approach to like the whole thing. Because in America, they have, it's a voluntary system, but it somehow seems to be all like mostly Latino people and maybe a couple other people of color.
Yeah, it follows the trends of signing up for military service, basically.
Yeah, like definitely people who need the money. not anybody who doesn't, you know, and you have that lovely moment where he says, this isn't for people like us, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not the people that volunteer because we don't need the money and we have everything we need. We're, you know, like they, I really like that naked acknowledgement of like, this is almost an academic question for us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all comfortably theoretical from where we're standing.
Yeah. You know, it's a kind of like Bill Maher going, well, I don't see why trans people get so up in arms about everything. Like, of course you don't, Bill Maher. You're a rich white guy. Like, what the fuck?
Isn't it kind of an amazing thing that you take, you have from that era to some degree, you have like, you have Maher and you have, what's the other one? You know, I was going to say Joe Rogan, but like somebody else that's of that era, Dennis Miller. And like, they were all just like spit on the feet of the establishment. And then they just got older and whiter. And then like, then you have like, but you have like people like been the same thing as like with Patton Oswalt and Marc Maron, and they evolved. Like, it is possible to evolve. Like, it is actually a thing that you could have done. But it's like, nope, Bill Maher, just like, nope, I still got to chasing. I still got to be chasing tail at LA nightclubs, you know, with women that are young enough to be my granddaughter. And, you know, like, oh, trans people are getting it too easy. Like, it's sort of like, it's like, ah, buddy, you missed your stop. Like, you should have got off that bus at some point. Like, and like I said, Patton and then Marc Maron are great examples of like how you evolve your brain. It's like, nope, fucking Spade and those losers just sort of like stuck 25 years ago and cannot move. But yeah, no, the academic aspect of that is like, that really spoke to me quite a bit. Cause like, you know, like cultural anthropology background, like it's, you know, there is that eternal thing of like, what is it academically versus what is it like in the real practical application? And so when you introduce that human element, it's like, that's when the whole thing just falls apart. And like some of that dialogue where they're like trying to suss out, like, you know, like who's going to be their body? Like, well, it should be you, right? That's logical. Like, it should be you. Like, fuck that. I think it should be you.
Yeah, you're adopted, man. It's not even your family. Like, whoa.
Yeah, it's just like, that is a... And he's the one that refers to... And it's funny, like, because in the first... You reflect on it later. In the first act of it, like, he's the one that uses the term dad in the most affectionate manner. Like, not in, like, a manipulative way. Like, in a sincere kind of way. And you're like, oh, man. It's like, geez. So they really kind of, there's certainly some raw nerves when it comes to the people part of this. Because the premise of the thing is the premise of the thing. But then it's the people part. That's the meat of it, really.
Yeah, it's the jumping off point for all of those tense discussions and occasional stabbings, right? Right.
Yeah.
As it should be.
What do you make of the, I was very, very curious to see what you guys made of the ending. Because, like, it felt almost like a Tales from the Crypt ending in a weird way. Mm. Like it kind of had that kind of like, you know, like it's the fingers?
The opposite though.
The
one with the thinkers. Yeah.
No, the fingers, like where the, you know, like where the person steps out of line and then like the second time and then it's like, then they chop off a finger or whatever. Which Tales from the Crypt story is that?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Gosh, darn. I can picture the darn thing where like the it's like the wife
is the Stephen King one. Oh, that's from Cat's Eye.
That thank you, God sakes. It wasn't Tales from the Crypt, it was Stephen King. Mm-hmm. That one, it's like the ending almost felt like that a little bit in a weird way. It's like when you pan, you get like the mom there, like, wait a minute.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of the opposite of a Tales from the Crypt ending. Mm. Where it was just like a lack of comeuppance was the entire point. I think it was supposed to make me a little mad, and it kind of did.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that was the big lesson, is like, the no matter what, this is so much bigger than all of us that one little thing doesn't make a difference, right?
Well, and we have all the money and privilege, so
right.
When he said, like, nothing will happen to us for anything, because they managed to, it seemed like they managed to blackmail the dude, or, you know, get him to cooperate in a way so that all of the family that was left alive could stay alive,
right,
and could move freely, right? Because they're all watching a former dope addict guy do piano, his like little piano concerto, And they're just all sitting in the theater, dressed in their fabulous clothes and looking completely unharmed. Yeah. And it's just the one sibling is dead. But otherwise, like, their life's going great. And then we see the little video, the little, like, promo for how the last two volunteers that we're celebrating are the two people who died in the movie. And they're just going to lie about how they died. And, like, well, you know, a body's a body.
Yeah.
So, I thought it really was just driving home that idea of this, the immense privilege of people who can even have this discussion.
Yeah.
And have options, you know, to say nothing about never having to actually suffer a consequence. So, like, this is thoughtful in parts, and it's genuinely tense in part to feel like I just wanted it to get cranked another notch in the dark direction or in the black comedy direction. These people are kind of horrible, but they need to be more disgusting so I can cheer for them being knocked out, or they need to be decent people caught in a pressure cooker, right? And I feel like they never quite settle.
And I think that's the part where I was having trouble deciding what to think at the end of this. And I think it comes down to, I think that's a good way to describe it, where I'm not able to sort of roll with the painting with a baseball bat level of social commentary. Because it's just clumsy as all get out. It's like, yeah, we get it. I know what you're doing here. Like, you've spelled it out in the premise. But, like, it's not funny enough to make the over-the-top, like, social commentary work as satire, sort of like it does in, like, Starship Troopers. But, yeah, it's also not just, okay, this is an insane premise, but, yes, you're actually concerned, you know, like The Collector or Saw or something, right? Because it's not, it is just some dummies kind of poorly stabbing each other, which is kind of funny. But then they have these really long, boring conversations about how shitty they are. And that stops being funny, but it's also not scary. So it just kind of wavers, meanders back and forth over that line. And I feel like if it had picked a direction and gone hard, it would have worked. And I was thinking, you know, maybe that's just, you know, newer hand at the till, and that will just come with more mature work. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it did kind of remind me a little bit of that one during Fantastic, or no, not for Fantastic Fest, during Chattanooga, that one Canvas that I think I told you guys about, whereas, like, it was the thing where the two sisters, where dad was an artist of some renowned, and then he had collected these, like, kind of, he had some fancy pants paintings, and the two daughters were both artists, one of whom was, like, kind of this recluse, and then the other one kind of went out in the art world, but it was like she kind of drifted on the very edges of, like, your relevancy or, like, notoriety or whatever else. And then it was like she's gonna take credit for the sister's work, and this kind of back and forth and whatever. And so, but it was like I was super conflicted about the ending. So I'm like if am I supposed to feel like maybe the bad guy is not really like the bad guy, or like kind of got like the short end of the stick and whatever. Cause like, I kind of felt like that with this a little bit, where like Emily Hampshire's character is sort of like she kind of sucks, but like not so bad. Like, it's kind of, I don't know. It's sort of, so I was like, I had a little bit of conflict about the ending. Cause like, you know, the mom sort of taking off or whatever else, and then them all sort of being together. It's like, maybe it is just, or maybe it is ultimately, like, instead of in the place of emotion or loyalty or care, it's like, it is just sort of academic discussion, like maybe that is the answer to it. But I just kind of wrestled with that ending part a little bit. I was like, well, I don't know about this.
But it's just like we get to ignore that this entire thing is happening now. We can just go about our lives, and they can keep just sacrificing the vulnerable folks to the grinder.
But I do, to your point, Joshua, like I do, I do definitely agree that, like, I think a level of commitment, one harder direction or other, like either you go Ready or Not, Ready or Not Abigail universe, or you go Eden Lake direction. Do one of those two, and this kind of does seem to sit like right firmly in the middle, I think.
I mean, I was really surprised though, given how it is that kind of, you know, line drive up the middle, but it actually got me when I'm here for you for life, girl, turns on her adopted brother.
Yeah.
and continues to, like, betrays him several times, earns his trust and betrays it again. It's like, man, that is harsh.
They really make sure. Yeah.
He is also no hero or no golden child either. And then you go, oh, but if you had just made them all super shitty to begin with. So yeah, you get some really good hints here of what this person's going to do next. By the way, this director, we should mention, is David Cronenberg's daughter.
Yeah.
And that's super cool.
Which kind of maybe might speak ever so slightly, not to put armchair psychologist, to the emotion is for the humans kind of in you. You know, it's like, and also it's funny too, like, was it J. Baruchel being, there was one that he did, it was a while back, called Good Neighbors. That was another Canadian one. It's like him and like Scott Speedman, I think, was in that one. And it's like, and that's one of those ones. This is accessible and kind of like a tense throw thing until you're like it goes like, whoa, like that's a lot. Or like Shallow Grave is like another one I thought of, like where you get like the kind of domestic sort of whatever until it just becomes way more extreme than what you're expecting. And so it makes me wonder if like you get to, you know, maybe there's something appealing about that part of it, of like that human disconnect where it's not just sort of your dramedy coming of age learning a lesson thing as much as it is like just like, can you do this exercise in a setup that is just so way out there, and then bring in that kind of human gross stuff that just really kind of will stick on you as a viewer. And it's like, and it's certainly not, I don't think it's necessarily an easy movie to make or to market. So, you know, it's an interesting kind of animal, but when it's all said and done, I thought it was kind of a cool, you know, kind of a cool little deal. Although, yeah, I would say certainly if anybody out there has not watched either Shallow Grave from like the late 90s or also the other one, Good Neighbors with Jerry Baruchel. Like, the one thing I'll say about Good Neighbors is if you have objects being stuck in somebody's body thing, like a squeamishness about that, wouldn't watch that one if I were you. Just saying.
So I remembered that Brandon Cronenberg is the other Cronenberg sibling who's made movies. And honestly, like, Infinity Pool was big and excessive, you know, to excess, and ultimately felt really, really hollow and shallow. And this one is very modest, but I think hit more of the marks that it was aiming for.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would watch this again before I watched Infinity Pool again. That was such a fucking flatulent movie. Just can't. I just wanted to take a chance to dump on that movie again.
There you go.
I'm the pool.
What Welcome do we want to rate this owl. Movie?
Notice there's no poo in it. It's fine. I think this is like a 6.5 out of 10. I do think that it is fun and interesting. It's always great when a movie intrigues you enough that you wish it were more of itself, I guess. But
yeah,
it didn't quite get there. I'm excited to see what she does next.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I think it has the shortcomings we kind of talked about. I do think that it is still more fun to watch than maybe I even made it sound. Hugely helped by Enrico
Colantoni.
Colantoni. That dude is... Like, when he first showed up, I was like, oh no, is he going to have this tiny little role as just like a nothing kind of boring character? Doesn't get to have any personality. I was going to be all bummed because I was so excited when he popped up. And the second the swerve begins, I just settled back in the couch like, oh, here it is. Now he gets to just run around and be so compelling.
He gets a ton of to do in this
movie. He gets so much business. And this him with the kid and the, oh God, he is so good in this. And so, yeah, that for a lot of the movie that might've dragged worse, or maybe, you know, I think like as the kids of the dad who's, you know, committed this thing that's got them having to sacrifice one, as they're all having their knife wielding standoff, he's out in an RV dealing with a bratty teenager. And it's the juxtaposition is pretty fucking great. That's where the humor, I think, really soars.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah. 7 out of 10.
Yeah. He's not a commando. He's more just sort of like, he's like middle management. He's just like a,
yeah,
Like the look on his face when he realizes she's torn up his playing cards. The look on his face is just like, ugh.
Yeah, just like, come on, why?
Like, what? Just, dude. Like, what? Just, man, like, I just, okay, fine. Like, just capture that beautifully.
It's the same, like, if someone ate his pudding cup from the work refrigerator.
Yeah, it has that same kind of, has the same kind of feel to it. It's just like,
oh, that's real mature.
Yeah. And then when they're putting it back on him, whatever else, and he starts doing that buckling down, and like, kind of like, I'm doing my job. Like, this is a thing.
Yeah.
We have to do this thing. There's a contract, and like,
it's he's not just me. Watching the scales tip in his head.
Yeah, and he's like, it's not me. I'm not, like, I'm not making the decision. Like, I just, you know, give me a break here. Like, it's just like, and that has a good bit of, like not so much levity that if it was played by some major league comedic actor that it would just would have really not worked. He just brings enough in there. You're just sort of like, like he's got that in the corner of his office. He's got that little hanging there, baby kitten. You know, like it's just that kind of thing. So yeah, hats off to him. Hats off to everybody. Like, really, really, really solid across the board. So yeah, I'm gonna say seven. I'll say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Well, I had a thing and I've forgotten what the hell it is now. Something about Peter Gallagher. I was going to make some kind of something about Peter Gallagher and Zoe's Infinite Playlist, like something, but I got nothing. So I'll say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Well done, America's Hat.
Ah, good, good. All right, let's talk about rabid grannies. Las abuelas rabiosas. First off, we should say that none of the women in this are grannies, and none of them are rabid.
Yeah,
they're aunties. I prefer Antichrists.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Because pretty good. They're great aunts, ants with my hands above my head. Anyway, they're great aunts to a bunch of ungrateful nieces and nephews who are trying to figure out which one of them is going to get left all of their precious, precious money, except for one nephew who has been kind of expelled from the family for his devil-worshipping ways. And he sends to the aunt's birthday party a box that, when opened, demonically possesses the two aunts, who then go and just do weird splatty shit for the rest of the movie.
Gleefully. Like, that's what that should be said. Like, it is just, it has, like, some Evil Dead in it for sure. It has
some Dead and some,
like Dead Alive. It's got, you know, it's got the gleefulness, and it's like, but it's also like just legitimately like, you know, there's not going to be like, there's no way out of this. So you're just like, you know, your ability to get out of the situation isn't happening. And so these demon creature things are just like having a fucking ball. It's just like, and to me, that adds a lot of the fun of this movie is like, it's cause like, this was one from like 10 gazillion years ago that was like, and it was one of those ones where I used to get from Video City, Josh, you've been Video City, where, you know, you get a lot of the old trauma ones. That's where I saw, you know, like Sergeant Kabuki Man and all the Toxic Avenger movies and whatever. Mm-hmm. But like trauma had nothing to do with the making of this movie. Like they didn't make this
one. They bought like Cannibal the Musical and shit.
Yeah, right? They got their hands on it, and then that was, you know, and so Trauma didn't make this, and I think it's, you know, God bless Lloyd and everybody else, but it's like, I think it's better for that, because it's just sort of, it's got a different, it's just, you know, a Trauma one would be to be a lot more, you know, and I'm sorry for the term, but just like overweight, gross people eating, and like, you know,
random boobs and
just like weird sexist crap and like all this kind of, there'd be a lot of that kind of nonsense, and this just doesn't have any of that. Nothing. Like, it's not, this is just not part of this movie's DNA, and it's just, instead it just leans into that, like, was it the church, like, I call it like church or like Demons 2 or, you know, like, yeah, Evil Dead or, you know, like, it's just
bonker gory.
Yeah, it's like, it's more in that realm, and it's just like, oh God bless you, you crazy fucking thing. And it just makes it fun. Like, it just makes it fun. And then, like, I think you guys probably, I think either you put it out to me or I put it out to you or something, but the production of this, that's like, it's like this Belgian production with all French speaking cast speaking English phonetically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, can you tell?
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It, like,
I don't think you can discuss it rationally so much. It is just a vibe thing, I think, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. But it is just like, yeah, it's going to be practical, crazy gore, silly monsters, not a lot of coherence. And so, like, yeah, you either just go into this going, yeah, I'm going to have fun, like I'm watching Evil Dead 2 or something, or I want a serious movie, in which case I'm going to watch something else. Like, there's just not a lot to try to, like, no one's going to be philosophizing over, like, the various timelines of this cinematic universe of rabid grannies and trauma.
Yeah, no.
What is the subtext?
Where's the text?
I guess we have to start there, yes. Well, the text was originally in French.
That's true, then, yeah.
About halfway through, like, man, that overdubbing is so weird, but it's because they had to match the cadence of the weird French people too. And
yeah, yeah. On top of being French, they were also weird French people.
They were and I repeat myself, but they. It says that some of them were speaking French on set, and then they ADR'd, you know, like he made them ADR everything amazing in English, so he could sell it. Like, the story of this just sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Where it, well, it really does seem like the pluckiness
that we admire.
Guerrilla filmmaking. We're like, I have this much time to make a movie. I got this much money.
It's a very Canon Films approach. Yeah.
And shoot for 6 weeks and we're done. Like, I would read the production diary of this, but it would be as fun as learning about what happened on Evil Dead.
For sure.
Well, and then also too, like, again, I don't want to beat up on trauma, but because it's not them making it, it just the thing where, like, the one great auntie in the car with the one lady, or else, and then it's like, you can go, and then she goes, and it's just sort of like she, like, possesses the dead guy in the driver's seat, like a killer, and it's like, ah, and the whole thing, and it's like, it almost has like a Bugs Bunny quality to it at that point,
for sure,
where it's that kind of like, it's like you wouldn't be surprised if one of the grows this big thing out of its arm, or else it says Acme on it, like it has that, like, level of glee to it, and it's like, and like that, and then, and they just mercilessly dismember a child, like. Like, you know, the leg comes flying down the stairs. You're just like, oh my god. Yeah, so it doesn't. And this is one of those ones where, like, you know, I think if you sat down academically, like, well, we should have, you had somebody more like to root for, or like a center or whatever else, or like, no. That's not this. That's not this. This is just sort of. It's an exercise in silliness. Like, this is the bunky Tex Avery version of, like, The Beyond. Like, it's sort of, it's that kind of thing where it's just sort of like every goofy thought that somebody had making it beyond, they're like,
this is where you get to, like, Bride of Reanimated level of nonsensical, not quite adaptation of anything anymore. Good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's just,
I have a lot of appreciation for just, like, gleefully going for it.
Hell
yeah. Way. It's funny, like, I would have sworn that I was over watching the too bad it's good kind of movies, but I still have the thing for sincerity, and this just really sincerely seems like somebody's attempt to make you have a good time, and they succeed. Like, they just keep piling on, you know, like the effect where the granny's mouth splits, and the one where she's like the bald alien looking thing, and just, oh, it's a very simple setup, and they just, like, use it just to hang all manner of practical craziness on.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what making this would have been. Yeah, because they're like, did it not seem a little bit like, yeah, because you guys have probably seen them too, like the various things about, you know, Rob Bottin and, like, Greg Nicotero, their early days where they're like, and of course Savini and these guys, where, you know, this is not the Dick Smith era where, or, you know, back into the Golden Age of Monsters where, you know, like, these guys are building out their own makeup, you know, like, this is not like Lon Chaney Jr. and Lugosi and these guys with their own little kits of things that don't cut into their skin and stuff like that. This is a different era, but, like, it also does kind of feel as though they're like, well, we got all the equipment and somebody else has a script that we can use. They're not real specific on, like, the monster's capability, so at any given point, like, we're just gonna, what if it shoots off the hand and then another hand grows back through, or what happens if this thing happens, or what if this other thing, like, and it's like, Give us a couple days. Like, all right. Mm-hmm. And then they come back like, we made this thing, and it grows out of this thing. And I'm like, cool. And then they just, it just felt like that.
Yeah, it seems like we have these gimmicks in the warehouse, so write those into your movie.
Yeah, we got to figure out a way to use this thingy, because it goes squeaky boop, and then cool. And all right, great.
Fantastic. The monster goes squeaky boop.
Yep. It's like, so yeah, I just, you know, and like, the some of the interpersonal stuff is hilarious. You have like the one kind of super posh fancy lady, whatever else, and like the kind of, you know, the sort of lover woman who's like much younger, but she's like kind of like just playing the field to whoever's going to benefit her the best, or whatever else, and that whole bit. And like, then you have like businessman who's business, whatever else, and that whole bit. And like, just all these like over the top characters, which really ought to just be really grating and annoying. And like, but you just kind of just take it as like, it almost like, not noises off. That's all I'm thinking of, but it's like almost just something where it's like every character is just sort of like turned up to like 10 and a half. Mm. Like maybe like a soap dish, like the one with Whoopi Goldberg and Sly Field. Oh, and, like, it's like that Kevin Klein, where it's like every character is just that right over the precipice. And you're like, if it went just too much further, you're like, these guys are all give me a headache, but it's not that far just yet. And so just enough where you're like, all these are characters, none of these are real actual humans. Like, we'll just go with it.
It's weirdly British, but yeah.
Yeah, that is,
like
yeah.
It's called Wanda or something. Like, all these people are just weird character quirks bundled up in skin.
Yes.
Like,
who among us?
Yeah, right, exactly. Who but that that comment holds a mirror up to itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, just a fun little thing that, I mean, quite honestly, like, this is one of those ones that, I mean, I guess they did put a Blu-ray out of this back several years, 8, 9 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever, but this is definitely one of those, this is one of those old VHS box ones that, like, I mean, I probably, when I saw this, this was probably one that Justice and I got from Video City along with like Dead Alive and Sergeant Kabuki. Like, this was around that realm, that's around that time when it was just one more 49-cent, you know, Video City rental,
right?
Because it said, you know, because it said trauma on it, and we could, you know, whatever. And it's like, and that's why when I watched this, I barely remembered any of this stuff. It's like no recollection whatsoever.
This was
like,
definitely the when the video stores had like the new release wall, and then everything else was like $5 for $5.
Yep.
And you're just like, oh yeah, all those cool looking horror box art ones. That's what I'm getting this weekend. Like, fuck yeah.
I get that terrifying one with the eyeballs, like the human eyeballs and a skull.
Whoa, God, that haunted me for years before I saw that movie. Still a great image.
Yeah, overall, this is like, I couldn't responsibly recommend it to most folks. I sat and watched it with Aaron because Jess went to bed early, and we just had a blast with it. I think you just need to watch it with at least one other person who's, you know, fits your nerd vibe. And it's fun. It doesn't have the dead air that a lot of those older.
Yeah,
for sure. That was very noticeable too. Yeah. This would be great for like a Dismember the Alamo night.
Yeah. Oh, I would watch this in a theater with a group of people.
Oh, God, that'd be a hoot.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now we got to talk to Twin Cities Horror Fest.
Yeah. Well, I just got that email that the Alamo up by us just reopened. So,
yeah, Sony owns Alamo now.
See how that goes now, right?
Won't go up, but a big old long thing. But a lot of people around here were getting all fussy and tight underpants about it. And my feeling on the matter is that like anything that's like gonna be that's blatant will seem blatant. But beyond that, like if the whole business strategy is leave it the hell alone, then
great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Like, then that's, you know, it's like,
be cautiously optimistic. And
yeah, that's my feeling on it. I mean, I don't know why everybody, people get so their underpants that twist about it. Like,
I understand the trepidation, but yeah, we don't know yet.
Yeah. But I guess my part of my thing is like, you know, my part of my thing is like, so for virtue, it would be better if it died.
Right. Yeah. So we live in a world of nothing because everybody's got so much punk rock street cred that nobody produces any art because if someone else sees it, you sold out.
Yeah, and I just kind of go like there's a lot of shitty companies and a lot of shitty, investment bank people and other kinds of private equity and garbage humans that could have, which was kind of who were doing a lot of this, you know, the intermediary between Tim and now Sony, where like, that's kind of where the direction I was going. And it's like, yeah, that's just a matter of time because, yeah, if you can put a bunch of yuppie pond scum condos in a space, why would you want to show movies there? And it's sort of like, that's the direction I was going to go. So if Sony keeps it alive and leaves it the hell alone, but for the most part, then like, it still lives. So like, that's a good thing. Like, I just, you know, this idea that like, oh, well, it's just like this big corporation. Like, look around your house, motherfucker.
Like, wasn't at that point the Alamo a big corporation?
That's the thing. Like, this is not the same. Like, you know, like it's Chris and I talked about this because I mean, she was here in Austin a long time ago, and then she moved. She lived in California for many years, then you know, back east for school and all that kind of stuff. And like, her memories of a lot of Austin things are like old Austin, where like there was the one Alamo location like off of 11th Street, which doesn't mean anything to you guys, but it's like that was the funky old theater, and then they like got the Ritz, which was a basically a vaudeville theater that still existed somehow. They used to do punk shows in the 80s. There's pictures in the lobby of the Ritz that were like, you know, like Black Flag and Minor Threat and stuff like that.
I remember that from getting the van.
And it's like it's that place. Yeah. And it's like, and so they got that one. And so they, and that was like the original one was 11th Street, and they got the Ritz and whatever. And so, but that's like old Austin. And it's one of those things that like, at a certain point, like, you know, then when they got to 20 or 30 or 40 locations, like this is not a bunch of movie loving weirdos like hanging out in like a decommissioned like portable building from like the public school district from, like the 60s. This is people running like a very very large business.
Yeah, they have that RV from Stripes.
Yeah, and it's like their values are not in a bad spot. It's just a different shaped thing. And so this idea that like, you know, Sony gets involved or whatever else, and all of a sudden it's going to be bad. Like, I just find that to be psychotic. It's just like, so you know, whatever. It's just one of those things that the fact that your alls are open, all the Dallas locations are back open again. You know, gets people back to work and gets people, you know, with access to be able to see movies. Like, it's not. I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily.
No.
You know, but I'm old and getting whiter, I guess. Who knows? But I hope not. Anyway, yeah. This is, you know, so Rabbit Grannies. We got to do this. And from a title standpoint, isn't it great to have a movie like this where so you can be like, "What'd you guys watch? Like Rabbit Grannies? Like, oh my god!"
It's always good in the lighthouse and The Color of My Mother's Tears and Rabbit Grannies.
Yes, exactly. So yeah.
Did we all rate this one? Or did we skip that? I don't remember.
And probably there were numbers.
Okay, whatever.
I mean, I'll just say 6.5 because I mean, there's not a. It's a 10. It's a 1. Like it's not. I mean, you know, it's a 6.5. I mean, it's an 8.5 for fun. It's like a 2 for coherence. So like, you know, I don't know. It's a 6. I would call it an affectionate, sloppy split mouth kiss of a thing with 6.5. You know, so.
All right, I'll say 7, because I had at least as much fun watching this as Humane.
I had fun, too, with Humane. Yeah. We'll take a quick break and talk about things that we're going to do next time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Come back.
All right, so coming up next, we're going to watch Vordelak, which is on video on demand and had a fascinating trailer that could go either way. Could be like the interesting parts of Tale of Tales. Could be like the boring parts of Tale of Tales. We'll have to see. One thing that we have all seen already but may see again this week is Alien Romulus, which is in theaters. Don't believe the stupid internet people in general, but also in this case, because they seem to have forgotten the difference between a movie that is ripping off other movies and a movie that exists in the same universe as other movies, which you'd think. And then we're also going to watch Dancing Village, The Curse Begins. That's on Shudder. So Shudder has got Dancing Village, The Curse Begins. We've got Alien Romulus in the theaters and Vordelak wherever you get your videos on demand. And I've been Josh this entire time. And thanks very much, if you hear the sound of my voice, for listening. And I will say, good night.
And next week's short will be called Pink Eye. and that will be located in the show notes at horseshowhotdog.com, where you can always check in if you want to see what we have on the docket for the next episode or watch the short before we talk about it. Email is on there as well if you want to drop us a line for any reason. And as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. If you do end up going to the theater to go see Alien Romulus, one of the cast members you will notice is a young man by the name of David Johnson. He is a British actor who plays Andy in Alien. I'm not going to say much more than that because you should just sort of see it as it goes. The young man was in my favorite movie last year. It was a little British movie called Rye Lane. If you're a super cynical person, you could write off as being like a romantic comedy thing, but I think it takes so many things about romantic comedies and makes them interesting and fresh and strips away some of the nonsense and injects a lot of humanity into a whirlwind of a thing in South London. And it takes a little while to get used to its tempo and what it's trying to do, but I just think it's a wonderful achievement in filmmaking in the most simple way. And he's wonderful at it, and it's a enjoyable, winning type of a thing. And so, like, you want to see somebody with some fucking range. Like, it's just like, yo, if you watch Alien, go on. I think it's on Hulu. Hulu has it, I think. But Rye Lane was my favorite movie last year, and he's wonderful in it, and it's a wonderful little film. Because we here at Horse and Hot Dog have multitudes of things that we like. It's not just the one thing. So that, take care of yourselves, take good care of yourselves, take care of each other. Turn off the internet and read a book, but then turn the internet back on, because streaming is the only way to get a hold of movies. So, just do little spits and starts, that's all I'm saying. Take care, and we'll talk towards you pretty soon. I will see you later. Bye bye.
And dang it, I just remembered that my intro for this week was going to be my favorite part of Deadpool and Wolverine was when they finally had Sabretooth and Wolverine get together and fight. And, they got Hugh Jackman and they got Tyler Mane and they made, the Jackman-Tyler fight, or as I like to call it, the Hugh Mane fight.
That's good shit right there. That's where your son gets it.
I just couldn't leave that on the table, damn it.
No, that's comedy gold, dude. It's not real unless we record it.
Exactly.